Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Thursday. I'm Clayton.
I'm Natalie.
Nice to see all of you. This is the show where we try to cover the news the mainstream media largely ignores, and we cut through a lot of the propaganda, of course, that the mainstream media heaps on top of you. We're going to talk about Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and we're going to show you some different takes on his comments last night because he announced for president, and the mainstream media largely ignored the story, which is not surprising at all. So we're going to go through this and how the mainstream media is responding to an RFK Jr. presidential run against President Biden in a primary. The New York Times response to this is pretty hilarious, so we will dive into that.
Plus, we are going to give you an update on the war in Russia and Ukraine, between Russia and Ukraine, and whether or not Putin is spying on the Nordic Sea, what's going on there and how other NATO-aligned countries are feeding into that. Plus, speaking of the Nord Stream pipeline, you better not share it on social media unless you want to go into Facebook jail. Facebook has decided what is true and what is not for you. This is what Michael Schellenberger calls the censorship industrial complex. We needed a new industrial complex. We got one.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Facebook, for letting us know what we get to see and what we don't get to see. So all of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Welcome, 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 everyone, on this Thursday. Hope you guys are doing well on Rumble. Let us know where you're joining us from on Rumble. Good to see everyone over there on Rumble. Brookers X says toxic Facebook. That's right. They are absolutely are. And good to see everyone on YouTube as well. Let us know where you're joining us from tonight. We've got a daily newsletter. It's totally free. You should all subscribe. It's what all the kids love to read every morning over their cup of coffee or when they're having their cereal. All they do, you go to redacted.inc to sign up, redacted.inc, you put in your email address, and then you have to verify that email. And then tomorrow morning, you get the newsletter first thing in the morning. And now it's a great newsletter. We cover like five or six of the big stories of the day. Plus, we try to do it with a little bit of humor. You can read it in about 5 to 10 minutes over your cup of coffee. You're not going to be taking up too much time, but hopefully you'll get some stories you won't see on CNN.com or other places that try to send you morning news updates with everything. So we hope you really, really enjoy it. Again, it's totally free, redacted.inc. And a lot of people asking in the chat, how's your daughter? Welcome back, Natalie.
Yeah, Thank you very much. Yes, she's doing much better. I did the dance this week where you wonder, is your daughter's illness viral or bacterial? Do they need antibiotics? Do they not? She turned out to be really sick, and it was really anxietizing seeing her fever continue to rise higher and higher. But she is much better today. So thank you for asking.
Yeah, she's doing much better. So she's sleeping. She's back to her sprightly, bossy, annoying.
Yeah, she's filling up to irritating me. So yeah, that's a good sign.
Yeah. When I hear her saying, no, mommy, I'm not doing this, or no, daddy, I'm like, all right, she's back.
She's back. Guess who's back?
She's back. All right, let's get to your top story today. Let's talk about Robert F. Kennedy. And a new poll out this morning shows, get this, that 14% of Democrats who openly voted for Joe Biden, they voted for him. They were excited about voting for him. They hate Trump, whatever. They were absolutely going to be in the can for Joe Biden. 14% of them would now vote for this newest candidate in the mix, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. That's right. Yesterday, Bobby Kennedy announced he's running for president of the United States. Again, Joe Biden against Joe Biden on the Democratic ticket for the primary. Now, Marianne Williamson also on there. The mainstream media, though, has been like bending over backwards, already trying to discredit his announcement. Look at the New York Times today. This is crazy. This is how the New York Times tweeted out their article on this. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced a presidential campaign on Wednesday, but built on litigating COVID-19 shutdowns and shaking Americans' faith in science, the New York Times writes. He joins Marianne Williamson as the second Democratic candidate to officially enter the race. Like, that's how the New York Times presented this. To which Caitlin Johnstone tweeted this, ha ha ha, holy shit, this is not even an opinion piece. This is a New York Times news report telling you that a presidential candidate's campaign is built on shaking Americans' faith in science.
It's assuming that you are totally fine with the way COVID-19 went down.
Right.
Like, yeah, that was cool. I'm fine with that, the way that you all handled that.
Yeah, lockdowns, everything. 2 years of now being behind for our children in schools as a result of that. All sorts of issues with vaccines. You're fine with that. You're fine with that. So that's what his campaign is built on. That's not what his campaign is built on. Why is the New York Times telling you that?
Because they can frame his social media around anti-COVIDism. Because he has been very vocal about COVID lockdowns and restrictions and vaccine mandates and the vaccine, quite frankly. So it will be easy. It's an easy build for them to sort of build him up as a conspiracy theorist, they think. And I only think that works if you are unwilling to sort of review your life experience of the pandemic. Because most of us, I mean, I was sort of a COVIDist, like, oh, yes, I will wear the mask and I will, you know, stay home and I will only have a few people go to the garbage even when we took the trash out, right?
Kid Rock was the same way. Kid Rock, in his interview with Tucker Carlson, he's like, I washed my hands 5 times a second. He's like, I wore a mask. I did everything, you know, and it's like, yeah, because that's what they were telling, you know.
And so then if you are unwilling to sort of review that and think, why did I think that? Who told me to think that? Where was the science behind that? And who had a power grab because I was willing to do that? Then, you know, then this, if you're not willing to do that, this headline is fine,
right?
I think. But if you've actually been like, yeah, I don't know why I did that. I should have thought that through, or I should have looked up certain things, or I was listening to this. Then yeah, this headline is like, oh, okay, he's one of those. He makes us review something uncomfortable. Do not want.
So Bobby Kennedy started off his announcement yesterday. We're going to go through a couple of, I think, some key moments here. He talked yesterday. He kind of kicked things off by focusing not on COVID vaccines, but instead on Ukraine asking and on Ukraine and asking the question, why are we there? Listen.
If you just want to ask, is it in our national interest? It is not. It is not in America's national interest to push Russia closer to China. That is a cataclysm. Number two, it's not in our national interest to do something that could involve us in a nuclear exchange with a country that has more nuclear weapons than us. We need to know as Americans, and we have a right to know, what is our government's chief objective in this war. Now, we were told initially that the objective was humanitarian. And that is a good reason to be there, a humanitarian. And what that means is trying to end the bloodshed and minimize it as much as possible. But in recent times, President Biden said that one of our objectives, at least, is regime change of Vladimir Putin. And this is the same strategy that did not work well for us in Iraq. And it's many of the same people who are around the neocons, who are around President Biden, who have been talking about that for a long time and have been engaged in geopolitical machinations in the Ukraine since 2014.
So they've been there since 2014. This has been the plan all along. People asking, you know, well, what's wrong with Kennedy's voice? If for those of you who aren't familiar, he has what's called spasmodic dysphonia, which where the voice muscles contract involuntarily, leading to like a totally distorted voice. So it's laryngeal dysphonia or something like that.
It sounds really painful. But you know, if you can get through it, he's saying really important things.
Yeah. So pay attention to exactly what he's saying because it's important. Something, then he said something is, you know, his father, of course, Robert Kennedy ran for president. And one of the big platform pillars for Robert Kennedy was poverty. It was truly something that changed his life. If you read biographies of his father, he traveled around the country, spent time in the poorest cities in America, going to West Virginia, and he vowed to make that the centerpiece of his campaign at the time in the 1960s, that along with ending the war in Vietnam. Of course, that didn't fly. It wasn't a popular platform among the establishment, of course, in the deep state. He was assassinated, never got a chance to live out that dream, of course. So his son last night talked about how the billions that we've been spending in Ukraine, we could do what we could do with that money in the United States to treat poverty in the United States and what that would look like to eliminate poverty in the United States and lift people up. Watch.
We are starving American people, and we are cutting them off from the kind of aid that we should be giving, that we're instead spending on being the policemen of the world. We have 800 bases around the world now. We spend $880 billion a year on our military. We were supposed to get a peace dividend. After the Soviet Union collapsed, we were supposed to go from $6 billion to $2 billion. That was a peace dividend. And then we were going to spend the rest, bring it home, and build schools and infrastructure. Instead, we've made up a bunch of foreign enemies and different enemies and things that we got to do to spend more money. The military-industrial complex and the intelligence agencies are telling us we got. Instead of dropping it to 2, we raised it to 8.8.
Here's the part that I found utterly fascinating. He started referencing what the founding fathers laid out, which was not becoming an imperial nation, but instead making a strong America. And he even talked about his grandfather, Joseph Kennedy, who believed that the United States should be a fortress, armed fortress that should be protected. But the way that it's protected is not through massive military. Instead, it should be through a really strong economy. And not going about trying to destroy other countries through imperialism. I was like, wow, who's saying that? Who's talking openly about that? So listen to what he said about how we've pushed basically China and Russia into that situation where they are doing that. And we have like spread ourselves so thin, and we are an empire in total decline. Watch.
You know, if you go back to the beginning of our history, our founders made so many clear warnings against Americans getting involved in foreign wars, because they said trying to be an imperium abroad is going to destroy democracy at home. It is going to turn us into a garrison state, a national security state, and a surveillance state. They said it's antithetical. The two are inconsistent. You cannot be an imperial nation abroad and a democracy at home. And and John Quincy Adams really spoke for all of the framers when he said, America goes not abroad in search of monsters to destroy. It's something we cannot afford to do in our country. My grandfather, Joseph Kennedy, said, well, we need to build fortress America. We need to arm ourselves to the teeth at home and make ourselves too expensive to conquer, and then build our economy, because the economy is the source of strength, not bullets and weapons. It's having a strong economy, a strong middle class.
Yeah, it's a keep your eyes on your own paper situation.
Right. Now, other people saying, well, Trump has said something similar, but what we're going to get to here in a second, no one but Kennedy has talked about, which is literally removing the military bases around the world. So, you know, there's a lot of, I've talked about this openly over the past couple of weeks, which is whenever we talk about the deep state, the idea of draining the swamp and eliminating the quote unquote deep state, you cannot have a conversation about doing that unless you're also talking about the military industrial complex, the thing that feeds the $900 billion a year that we spend in a budget to feed that beast, right? And so all of Trump's discussions about the deep state and removal of the deep state, unless I missed it, when his speech a few weeks ago really attacking the deep state, he didn't mention the military-industrial complex as part of that deep state, as a part of that entrenched machine that needs to be eliminated.
Well, because Trump said a lot more of that on the campaign, and it did seem like, even in some reporting about, like, why can't we just withdraw from these certain places? He wanted to withdraw from Afghanistan. He wanted to withdraw from a lot of different places. And he was told, you just can't. Sorry.
Right.
There were people who just, you know, I mean, he wasn't going to do it personally. He didn't know how, but he didn't have anybody to, you know, he didn't really know how to make that happen. And he was told that he couldn't.
And he had a lot of swamp monsters who like latched on and got around him, who basically told him, no, you can't get out of Afghanistan. You can't leave Somalia. You can't leave Syria. You can't leave these places.
Yeah.
We have drone programs that are continuing. You can't do that, Mr. President. There was a lot of anger among, you know, the rank and file in the military. I know about that. But I've never heard it said like this. I'll tell you, I've never heard it said like this. So this was one of the biggest. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, we got $900 billion that's public that we account for. Well, you don't account for it, but we say that's what's going. But like you're talking about deep state, I guarantee there's secret money going all over the place that they have to hide so there's no money trail back to the real things that we're doing in some of these countries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It's the off the book stuff. Mm-hmm. Larry Johnson on our show a number of times, we've talked about this. Like that's the stuff we know about and hear about in a public congressional hearing. But all the off the book stuff that gets paid for is ridiculous. So this was one of the biggest applause moments of the speech, saying that his uncle, JFK, was lied to by the CIA directly and vowed to dismantle the CIA brick by brick after the Bay of Pigs invasion. Why do you think he was assassinated as a result? Watch.
And my uncle came into office 2 months later. He was fighting his intelligence apparatus, his military, because they wanted to invade. They wanted to do the Bay of Pigs. He was totally against it, and he let them roll over him. And in the middle of the Bay of Pigs, he realized they were lying to him, and he realized the function of the intelligence agencies had become to provide the military-industrial complex with a constant pipeline of war. And he came out during the middle of the night during the Bay of Pigs catastrophe, and he said, I want to take the CIA. Alan Dulles had lied to him, Charles Cabell, Richard Bissell, Louis Lemitzer, Curtis LeMay had all lied to him through their teeth. And he said, I want to take the CIA and shatter it into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the winds. And, you know, George W. Bush had the same problem. George W. Bush says the worst mistake he made as president was listening to CIA Director George Tenet tell him it was a slam dunk that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And so the neocons and CIA got to go into Iraq and throw out and do regime change. And we got now we've spent $8 trillion. And what do we get for that $8 trillion? Nothing. Worse than nothing.
Worse than nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing. Worse than nothing. An entirely destabilized Middle East. Millions of migrants, of course, who've left, then have helped also destabilize parts of Europe as a result of it. Millions of deaths as a result.
Put that in perspective. Think of what $8 trillion would have done here for infrastructure in the United States. Just one war, $8 trillion. Imagine.
You can't even wrap your head around it. You can't imagine how different America would look if we took a war on our infrastructure, right? Or we declared war on our education system in the United States. It would be totally different. Our rail infrastructure, I mean, our highways, everything, our airports. And then so finally, Kennedy wrapped it up with this. He said he will also force Trump. This is the part that sort of gave me chills. He closed by sort of dropping this bomb, announcing that as president, he will close all of the military bases, all of the U.S. military bases around the world, and bring the troops home. What? Watch.
And I'm going to bring the troops home. And I am going to start. I'm going to close the bases. And I'm going to start investing in the United States middle class in our country. And I'm going to make us an exemplary democracy again.
Well,
so
haven't heard that since Ron Paul, a Republican.
Yeah. Yeah. So then the question is, will the media let him say these things? Will he get airtime on the mainstream media? Will they actually cover him as anything more than a joke? Because these things are not funny.
No, I'm glad Tucker had him on last night. Tucker's a friend of his. He had him on last night. He speaks very highly of him. He's like, you know, he talks about him openly. He's one of the, he says, you know, RFK Jr. is one of the few, like, really honest people, really good people. And so he had him on the show last night. And he said, will you get, you know, open, honest requests from NBC and MSNBC and CNN and other things? I mean, imagine back in the day what they would have done to have a Kennedy on the show. How many times did, you know, think about that for a second. And because they don't like that he attacks their sponsors, all of their big pharma sponsors that funnel billions of dollars to CNN and all these other networks, you know, Tucker did a whole start-off thing where he was sort of making fun of MyPillow last night, you know, and I thought it was a really, it was a great take. He's like, imagine if we told you every night that MyPillow was the most important life-saving thing, right? And then, and he did it as a sort of a contrast between big pharma always funneling billions of dollars or millions of dollars in advertising to the other networks. And if we had found out suddenly, he's like, what if we suddenly found out that MyPillow was killing people? Would we still push it? You would hate us. You would find us to be, you know, and it was a funny contrast of this. And they don't like that, that he's called these advertisers out who funnel all of this money to these networks.
Yeah.
Go ahead, David.
Well, I was just going to say, like I told our moderator, Anthony, we were talking about this earlier that, you know, he's going to be an easy one for the establishment and the media to take down because of the things he talks about, the things that we want to talk about, the things that we sometimes talk about on this show and have been suspended for. That's going to be easy for them to marginalize him, I feel.
Yeah. But hopefully, my hope is that these conversations now are allowed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it opens up a broader dialogue about this.
Right.
You know, you'll have news anchors who are able to engage on this question about all of the issues that we've seen with vaccines and everything else, right?
Well, beyond that. Yeah. Like, Ukraine. why do you feel this way about Ukraine now? When the coverage was different 10 years ago, why, you know, all kinds of questions that he can ask, maybe if they give him the platform to ask. But a lot of times they don't platform people like this who don't mimic their narrative.
Yeah. So let us know your thoughts on this. We're not picking, you know, sides one way or the other on this. I just think this is the kind of guy you're not going to see in the mainstream media getting full coverage of his speech. So we want to share it here because that's our job.
Well, and really,
is to prevent,
really, you know, quick, I want to ask you guys a question. Sorry about that. Well, what do you guys feel about him running as a Democrat? Do you think that that's going to be harder for him because he's going to be going up against Biden? Or do you like he should have picked a different party, like a independent or something? Or how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of my own one sort of, you know, knee jerk like sort of reaction is, oh, he has to run as a Democrat. But, you know, that's a he has such a deep history with that party. His family has such a deep history with that party. Maybe in his mind, he feels like he could rescue it somehow.
But also there are many Democrats who voted for Biden because they just were tired of Trump, who now feel like the left has been hijacked by the illiberal movement of all kinds of things, of censorship, authoritarianship, Antifa, and transhumanism, and all of these things. And they are actually willing to read the Twitter files and take them seriously and review their life experience of the pandemic and all of these things. And they do feel like Joe Biden is not actually, you know, is one of these illiberal leftists. And I want to still be someone who I feel these certain values of, I don't know, acceptance or however they, you know, may describe themselves, but do want a candidate that's not Joe Biden because they are willing to think rationally. I think there are more Democrats than you think that are feeling just really disenfranchised by their own party.
Yeah. And, you know, as an independent, you're, of course, then you're up against a whole other host of issues trying to get yourself on a ballot. And there's a huge Democratic Party infrastructure that he is familiar with and probably has friends and close allies with. So who knows? We'll see. And then, of course, you've got Marianne Williamson in the mix. So it's going to be an interesting primary. A president of the United States, a sitting president of the United States, who's by all accounts demented, gave a speech yesterday at the White House and was lost, like walked off. Couldn't even find his way. Didn't even know what he was doing.
Yeah.
So a sitting president of the United States is being primaried right now. It's a pretty amazing moment. So this election season is going to be absolutely crazy. All right. We've got more news to get to on this Thursday edition of the show. We're going to talk about why Putin is warning Norway as the Arctic battle is heating up. We're going to dive deep into what's happening up towards the Arctic Circle. And this is something that hasn't gotten really any coverage anywhere. So we're going to cover that. We're also going to look at Facebook deciding to ban any mention of the Nord Stream pipeline as it relates to Seymour Hersh's journalism.
Plus, we're going to look at new research that finds that there is not enough evidence that suggests that bodily transition is the solution to gender dysphoria. We're going to go over the research and provide you some updates on that movement as well.
That's right. But first,
would you like me to do this?
I can do whatever you want.
Okay, go ahead.
So if I spent my summers growing up always cutting the backyards. I was part of a lawnscaping team, What am I trying to say? Landscaping team. Lawnscaping team. Most of my summers in college and high school, and so many, many lawns, many bags of clippings, much mulch, trying to keep lawns together. If you want to breathe some life into your own backyard, you can do it with fastgrowingtrees.com this spring. Because from shade to fresh fruit to privacy and natural beauty, fastgrowingtrees.com can help you plant your dream garden with their expert advice, fast and reliable shipping. So what I love about Fast Growing Trees is that it curates thousands of easy-to-grow plants, shrubs, and tree varieties for your unique climate. And we ordered right through their website. Based on your zip code and where you live, it'll give you the best types of plants that will grow in your climate. We ordered a beautiful, like, Japanese maple for the front yard, and it was absolutely gorgeous. Shipped right to the front door and easy to plant. Absolutely gorgeous. No more waiting in long lines, hauling heavy plants around. Every time you get some plants in the back of your truck or your car, all of the dirt gets everywhere. You don't have to deal with that at all. It'll be delivered right to your front door. Your plants arrive at your door in just a few days. Absolutely fantastic. And Fast Growing Trees has a 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee. So you know everything that you get will look great, fresh, out of the box, and it will survive and look beautiful. Join over 1.5 million happy growing tree, Fast Growing Trees customers. So go to fastgrowingtrees.com/redacted now to get 15% off your entire order. Get 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com/redacted. So if you've got one of those box hedges that's died over the winter with a heavy snow and you're thinking about replacing it, now's the perfect time. You've got some little hedge or shrub that just is not looking good. You want to add something to it. Add some color. Go to fastgrowingtrees.com/redacted right now and get 15% off your entire order. So our thanks to them.
Where are your glasses?
I can't find them.
Oh.
Why?
I saw them on the landing.
Oh, okay.
The stairs.
I was squinting and I was kind of scrambling before the show. So I don't have my glasses. I don't have my spectacles tonight. So if you see me kind of struggling, I'm like looking across at monitors and stuff.
You're
like
doing
that.
All right. You're doing right. Good. Why am I the only one in glasses?
Yeah, the bug eyes tonight. Got the bug eyes. All right. Well, the battle for the Arctic Circle is getting hotter by the minute. Who will control the most important shipping route of the next 100 years or maybe 200 years? Will it be Norway? Will it be Russia? Will it be the United States? Russia has already sort of planted their titanium flag on the territory that has already filled right now. They've already filled the waters in the Arctic Circle with their nuclear-powered submarines, ice-breaking vessels, you name it, radar equipment. Everything you can think of from Russia is already in this area now. Mobile military bases, where they're not even locked in place, floating and moving. That's how much Russia has now already taken over this area. But Norway is trying to pick a fight right now, which we'll get to in just a moment. And is Norway, I guess, maybe doing the bidding of the United States once again? So first, Norway already has blood on its hands, of course. Norway and the United States blew up the Nord Stream pipeline, an act, according to Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Seymour Hersh, Norway was not an innocent bystander in this at all. In fact, they are the ones that literally pushed the button that blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. That's what Seymour Hersh stated in his journalism. Norway made the plan to use the Battletops 22 training exercise as cover for blowing up the Nord Stream pipelines. Norway's Navy supplied the Alta-class mine hunter that carried the divers and the explosives to the scene of the crime. And then on September 26, 2022, the Navy P-8 surveillance plane was provided by Norway. It then made a seemingly routine flight, flew out, dropped that sonar buoy that set off the explosion. So quite literally, Norway blew up the Nord Stream pipeline in concert with the United States. They're the ones that pressed the button. they're the ones that did most of the planning and coordination of this. So did Russia attack its neighbor as a response? No, Russia never attacked Norway for it. No, Russia didn't do anything to Norway. In fact, the opposite just happened in Norway. Norway expelled 15 diplomats for intelligence activities. The embassy officials are accused of spying under diplomatic cover, they said. Norway says 15 Russian diplomats working at the embassy are spies, and it's booting them out of the country. Norway's foreign minister accused Russian officials of working as intelligence officers under the cover of diplomatic positions. Like, let's be honest. Isn't that what they all do anyway?
What? Work like, undercover?
I mean, look, they're Russian. They're in Norway in the embassy, in the Russian embassy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, by nature, they're there as...
You're saying all diplomats are there as a foreign influence?
Yeah.
Absolutely, that's the case.
I mean, so we're suddenly surprised that they're being Russian? I just find this hilarious.
I mean, it's maybe not to the extent of the Americans, you know.
The show, the Americans. The show.
Yeah. But yes, all embassies try to exert foreign influence on the place where they are. That is sort of their job. That's why they're there. I mean, they have this sort of cover of provide passports and notaries and things like that to expats living abroad. But beyond that, they all do outreach programs to spread their own culture and concepts. The United States no more than the United States spends, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars every year to throw a 4th of July party at all of its embassies. And, you know, they sort of, we've talked about these drag queen shows in Ecuador as exporting our culture. And yeah, that is, I guess you could say that that's intelligence or foreign influence.
Intelligence officers, intelligence gathering. I mean, I guess if at night they're, you know, during the day they work at the embassy and then they've been tracking them, and at nighttime they go down to the dockyards with their binoculars or something, you know, and they're like, yeah, we saw Mikhail down there every night. He's been down there with the binoculars, so we got to get him out of the country.
Well, yeah. Maybe I mean, we don't know.
Maybe he's there whale watching. We don't know. But anyway, they said that that's what they're doing. So, but Putin's not happy about this. Fired back. Putin's pissed. Says Russia will respond. Putin says the relations between these two countries is the lowest it's ever been. It's not good for either side, says Putin. I mean, they share a friggin' border, for crying out loud. No good for either country, Putin says. So what exactly are you doing, Norway? Digging your own grave here? Because it doesn't help that the stooge in charge of NATO is the same guy, is a guy by the name of Jens Stoltenberg. He's Norwegian. And the next battle is over the shipping lanes through Arctic waters. So what are you trying to do here? Are you trying to set up for a battle right now? We know that these sort of strategic exercises have been going back and forth, where Russia will basically try to hit Norwegian targets in their practice rounds. And then Norway basically is doing the same thing, trying to hit Russian targets. So are we seeing like the staging grounds for the next battle that's coming over the Arctic Circle? There are six countries right now that surround the Arctic Ocean, being Russia, Canada, the United States, Denmark, Norway, and Iceland. And the Arctic Council, which sort of governs all of this, is in danger, according to a number of different analysts on this. Right now, turmoil could be about to hit the Arctic Council. The Council holds meetings to determine the future of the polar region. Right now, Russia holds the chair position. They had it for 2 years. They're about to hand it over next month to Norway. That's supposed to happen, but it might not. And what does that mean? What does that mean if it doesn't happen? Because the rest of the other countries, not including Russia, decided to cancel their most recent meetings. We don't really want to talk with you anymore, Russia. But wait a second, Russia's on the Arctic Council. So what's going to happen here? Even before that, the seven Western Arctic Council members decided to pause their council cooperation with Russia. So let's get this right. Russia controls 50% of the Arctic. Because of the war in Ukraine, you're now snubbing their involvement in the Arctic Council, almost pretending they don't exist. What do you think they're going to do to make decisions about the Arctic? Are they going to do it without Russia's involvement? Good luck with that. You think they're going to sit idly by and have NATO countries dictate shipping lanes and military drills? the United States is woefully behind when it comes to any sort of Arctic infrastructure at all. And so now is the United States going to be dictating to Norway and these other countries what happens in the Arctic Circle? No one's talking about this story because I don't know why. You can't send press people there. You can't get cameras there. You can't get news reports there. So the news that we get basically is relied upon by the Arctic Council. The information we get comes out of basically the Arctic Council. I mean, if I wanted to book a flight, where would I go? How do I get to the Arctic? You know, I'm going to the North Pole to do some news reporting. Good luck.
I don't know.
Penguin Airways.
A canoe.
Going up there to do some work. What most people don't know, because Russia doesn't really talk about it, is what Russia is doing in the Arctic. You've all heard about China and their Belt and Road Initiative, which of course creates massive shipping lanes, rail infrastructure, trade routes through the Middle East and Asia, and through the South China Sea. But you might not have heard about Russia's Arctic Road plan, and which is unfolding, which is doing virtually the same thing. Removing dependence on the Suez Canal, the Panama Canal, and traditional trade routes, creating massive new trade routes that don't rely on those old 1800s trade routes anymore, that are, by the way, controlled largely by the United States. And now would be controlled by Russia. Oh, and by the way, and China. But you haven't seen this on CNN. Over the past year, the team at Redacted has been following this Arctic story closely. We've actually been building a documentary on the Arctic specifically and the sort of the hidden history of the Arctic and what this means going forward. But then, of course, this news started unfolding this week and we had to jump on it. So this new trade route, which will control trade between the East and the West and the North and the South, doesn't rely on the Suez Canal and the Panama Canal, which can take upwards of a month or more for deliveries. Russia is in the lead in this area. And we already know that the United States is, think about all of the massive mineral resources that are in this space. Massive, absolutely massive. And the United States is way behind on this, totally behind. Here's Rex Tillerson, who was the former Secretary of State, of course, big oil and gas magnate before that. So knows a thing or two about the power of oil and gas in this region. Listen.
What I can tell you is the United States is behind. We're behind all the other Arctic nations. They have dealt with this. They've gotten way ahead of us. The Russians made it a strategic priority. Even the Chinese are building ice-breaking tankers. Now, why are they building icebreakers? They're not an Arctic nation, because they see the value of these passages. So we're late to the game. I think we have one functioning icebreaker today. The Coast Guard's very proud of it.
Yeah.
As crummy as it is.
Yeah.
And I know in the budget, there is money in the budget for us
to
build another icebreaker. But the whole Arctic region, because of what's happened with the opening of the Arctic passageways from an economic and trade standpoint, but certainly from a national security standpoint, is vitally important to our interest.
So if they add the Arctic area to the Russian territory, they will have their hand on roughly 16% of the world's untapped oil reserves, 30% of the world's undiscovered natural gas reserves, gas that lies buried beneath the ocean, in addition to the vast mineral deposits, nickel, platinum, many rare earth minerals that are totally needed right now. Russia is sitting right there on top of, in tandem with China, by the way. The decades of undisrupted waters have also made it rich in plankton, which in turn attracted a massive number of fish that live in that region as well. So all of the fisheries and the available stocks there as well. As if the Arctic needed to be any more appealing to Russia, the two commercial shipping passages, the Northwest and the Northeast, will have many advantages through that region. Two things to put in perspective here. Consider the traditional route of Rotterdam in the Netherlands to Shanghai in China. In the early 19th century, a ship would have had to travel around the Cape of Good Hope in South Africa. But once the Suez Canal in Egypt was built in the 1800s, the long trip around Africa could be avoided. The same journey became 23% shorter. The new Northeast Passage through the Arctic Circle will take another almost 25% time off of this journey. Tremendous. saving both time, fuel, cost, making it incredibly strategic important. If Russia owns that passage, game over. Does Russia want to deliver oil and natural gas through the United States-controlled canal systems in the Middle East? Of course not. Remember when this happened at the Suez Canal?
Now, it's one of the world's most important shipping routes, and it's blocked. A giant container ship ran aground in the Suez Canal after losing power. And at around 200,000 tons and over 400 meters long, the container, well, it's going to take some shifting. 50 ships a day normally pass through the canal, carrying 12% of the world's trade. So the pressure is really on to get her refloated. Here's Richard Galpin.
So 6 days it took to remove that ship, bringing global shipping to a standstill. Russia has now deployed its own version of floating military bases in the Arctic, with the icebreaker vessels constantly on the move, looking for blind spots in the radar right now, so that their radar coverage is totally mapped out and taken care of. So even in the Arctic Circle with these icebreakers, and these sort of military bases are mobile instead of being stationary. China is currently developing special nuclear-powered icebreaking vessels to connect Russia's Arctic Road Initiative with its own Belt and Road Initiative. So combined, basically, China and Russia together on this, they have shares in the Arctic that top $35 trillion worth of oil and natural gas together. So does the United States want a piece of that? You bet they're trying. Is this maybe perhaps the next stage in this war that we haven't really heard much about? It was never really about Ukraine in the first place. It was always about undermining Russia's growth. But little did they know that they might put Russia and China so closely together in this alliance. I mean, Biden has done one hell of a job bringing about the downfall of the United States in the global power rankings, and then bringing together China and Russia in such a way, and even doing it over ice in the Arctic Circle.
Right. Well, the International Monetary Fund just today put out an estimate that by 2027, I think, that the BRICS nations will be responsible for 35% of the global economy. Already it is bigger than the G7 by just a few percentage points, but that lead is expected to widen in the near future, in the coming years that are upon us.
That's crazy. We're going to talk about the Nord Stream pipeline explosion, Seymour Hersh, Facebook. We're going to talk about this new trans research that's out. We've got so much more to get to on your Thursday. Hope everyone is doing well on your Thursday. But first, it's no secret. If you're tuned in, then you know experts are predicting a recession heading our way. Layoffs already happening by the tens of thousands. Government is all ready to print more money as we head into 2024 election season. QE will take over once again. More printing of the U.S. dollar, further devaluing the U.S. dollar. Last year was one of the worst years for most investors. 2023 could have been worse, could even be worse. That is, unless you're smart and you're really thinking about how to protect your family, investing in gold, silver, and other precious metals while you have a chance right now. 2023 is looking even better for gold and silver for investors. New all-time highs for these precious metals while the U.S. dollar is under the gun. So if you're interested in investing in gold, the team at Lear Capital will help you start purchasing precious metals or converting part of your IRA or your 401k into a gold and silver IRA. Call Lear Capital today at 1-800-613-3557. Just get on the phone and give them a call, or go to LearRedacted.com. Right now, if you buy 1 ounce of gold, Lear Capital is giving away a free ounce of silver. That's incredible. Literally free silver that you can keep or you can sell immediately. Again, give them a call, 1-800-613-3557, or go to LearRedacted.com.
All right. Well, you better not share anything about the Nord Stream pipeline on Facebook if you don't want to be put in Facebook jail, because Facebook is deciding that the United States had nothing to do with the explosion of the Nord Stream pipeline. And if you share that, you're going to get a demerit, or they will at least block it or censor it. And we're going to show you exactly how. Have you ever been put in Facebook jail?
I've definitely had Facebook posts taken down and blocked over the time. Yeah. But I don't even use Facebook anymore. So I think
it's very random. David, yeah. I'm sure you've.
I walked away from Facebook. Yeah. David's on Facebook. I walked away from Facebook about 4 years ago. I think if you actually go to my profile and look, I think my last My last post that wasn't just saying thank you for somebody wishing me happy birthday was probably 5-6 years ago.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. I only sort of post stuff on Instagram sometimes and then it gets pushed over. But I'm sure David's got a lot of stories about being blogged on Facebook.
I'm sure.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about this story. So journalist and author Michael Schellenberger found that Facebook is censoring the damning article from journalist Seymour Hersh that accuses the U.S. of blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline. We've covered this at length. I'm just going to sum it up quick. Hersh is saying that he spoke to inside sources that told him that the U.S. Navy was asked by President Biden to blow up the Nord Stream pipeline between Russia and Germany, and that Biden used the Navy with the help from Norway to do it so that he could keep from having to seek congressional approval for this act of international sabotage. So that's the gist. Facebook does not want you to say that. Seymour Hersh has an excellent track record, by the way, for exposing the military-industrial complex going back to the first Iraq war. But Facebook doesn't want his reporting shared. They are censoring this story. Here is a video that Michael Schellenberger posted just today because he tried to share this video. I'm going to talk over it because it's just kind of, you do hear him like sort of coughing in the background, but he doesn't speak. So let's go ahead and roll it. So here he says, you know, we've heard a rumor that Facebook is censoring this article. So he tries to share it himself. So here's a link to the article that we've discussed at length. He tries to share it. And then if you look, what happens is that he goes down and he shows that it's been blocked. And it says false information checked by independent fact checkers. So when he pushes forward to see why, it says, no, this has been fact checked. And it gives him this link. The link we're going to talk about further at further length. But it is an article that is so-called debunking this. And we're going to go over exactly why. Now, we have covered why we here do put stock in the Seymour Hersh report, but let's just suspend that conviction for a minute and pretend we don't know and this is neutral reporting and we would just like to be informed citizens and consider it for ourselves. Why is Facebook saying you shouldn't? Why are they making this decision to censor this piece of information? And who is Facebook relying on to fact check this story? Is it someone with more credibility and a better track record than Seymour Hersh? The who bit is really important because the fact checker that Facebook relies on for the final word here is the Norwegian public broadcaster NRK. On March 14th, the organization reprinted an article by this site, FAKTISK, so Faktisk. .no. It's a media watchdog, which counts the Norwegian public broadcaster, NRK, among its partners. So here is an English translation that I took a screenshot from. I did read through it. There are a few reasons that the article claims to debunk Hersh's reporting. One is that the map that Hersh shows of Norwegian naval bases is wrong. Only he said so. Take a look. This is from his page. It says their map is not exact. So they're saying, oh, you put up this map of, you know, naval base. It's a graphic. It's basically just a graphical breakup of your story. They also go into detail about why the ships that Hersh claimed were involved in this sabotage were not actually in the places they needed to be when this took place. So, you know, I'm not going to go through it point by point, but they also say, just sort of point blank, that the Norwegian government has denied that they had anything to do with it. So there you go. That Norway didn't do it because Norway said they didn't do it.
Sorry, but is it like calling them out saying, well, this has been fact checked to be incorrect because the map wasn't right? That's like saying, well, this information is completely false because you used the wrong your. You used Y-O-U-R rather than Y-O-U-R-E. Yeah.
Right. It has to all be.
Well, they've done the same thing with Matt Taibbi in the Twitter files, right? Because he had some slight misuse of one word. They were like, well, you see, he should be better than that. He shouldn't make any mistakes.
Okay.
And then he corrected it like almost immediately.
Well, and they're actually talking about filing charges on him from the Medi interview on Matt Taibbi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just for making one mistake. I mean, so we have to throw the whole.
It really turned out to not even be a mistake.
So he has a map. By the way, every map we had growing up in school was all fake. Right? Like You know, all the maps that were hanging up in your social studies rooms about the size of the United States versus the size of Africa, like it was always proportional, like they're all,
okay.
Those were all fake anyway, like proportionally.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, I can't sort of say were the ships in the right place, like play this battleship game of like who's right and who's wrong. So I'm deciding not to do that. We need an expert to do that. That's got a lot more time than I. But again, their claim that, well, Norway denied having an involvement, so that's the final word. You know, that's kind of a bad faith argument because Norway is being accused, right? And so you can't, you don't just accept the accused word for it, and that's the end of it. And Hirsch gives a reason why Norway was involved in this. So, of course, Norway would say this. Here is how Hirsch explained why Norway would partner up with the U.S. to do this in the first place, saying that back in Washington, partners, including Biden and his troops, knew they had to go to Norway because they hated the Russians. I don't know that if that's past tense, actually. And the Norwegian Navy was full of superb sailors and divers who had generations of experience in highly profitable deep sea oil and gas exploration, the source said. And they could be trusted to keep the mission secrets. Well, is that what they're doing right now? Is continuing to keep that secret by denying that they did it? The Norwegians may have had other interests as well. The destruction of the Nord Stream, if Americans could pull it off, would allow Norway to sell vastly more of its own natural gas to Europe. That ended up happening. Now, Hirsch also says that the Norwegian Navy has a long and murky history of cooperation with American intelligence, and that begun over six decades ago and led into the Vietnam War. Here's a screenshot of his explanation where he talks about how Norway had these boats that were known as Nasty Class for their powerful gunnery, and some of them were sold to the U.S. Navy. So we know, like, there's something worth sniffing at here. Well, now Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and Finland are all saying that Russia is using ghost ships to monitor the Baltic Sea and make sure no more explosive events happen. There's a new documentary in these countries that is saying that by ghost ships, they mean non-military ships are tracking and monitoring things and then sending that data back to the Kremlin. Watch how Euronews explains this sort of Russian monitoring that they just don't like. And so they're calling it kind of a bunch of ne'er-do-wells floating around this area. Watch.
Russia is using civilian vessels in the Nordic Sea to survey and spy on key infrastructure. That's according to a new report produced collectively by Sweden, Denmark, Norway and Finland's national broadcasters. The team used traffic shipping data, radio communication surveillance and sources in the security services to verify the report.
Det är ju allvarligt för det visar ju på en intention att underrättelseinhämta på ett väldigt offensivt sätt och att kartlägga saker som är oerhört viktiga för Sverige och för Sveriges funktion som samhälle.
Sweden's military is aware of this kind of activity, but says it has limited legal options to react as the ships are still allowed to move freely.
Ja, men det är ju en gråzon att man kan använda civil verksamhet för att inhämta militära kunskaper. Det är ju någonting som vi tränar oss på att skydda oss mot. Vi noterar alltid deras närvaro och anpassar vår verksamhet efter det.
Around 50 non-military vessels are being used for Russian espionage activities. The Nordic journalist revealed that the monitored boats have sailed past oil and gas pipelines and other critical infrastructure. In some cases, boats were tracked to have sailed close to both NATO and national military exercises.
Okay, so they're saying that they're gathering intelligence in an offensive way. I'm not sure what I make of that. It's like they have people doing research and they're surveying and also like kind of looking out to see if anybody else bombs anything else. And that's offensive.
Well, I'm pretty sure the official way to ask for like secret information is like, pardon me, sir, but may I borrow some of your secret information right. that I might use in my government? You know, like, right. jolly good. I don't
it's
know why you have to be so
in
British
fishing
in that.
Boats.
Right, right, right. It's hilarious. Like they're looking through their binoculars, but they're also like the one eye is through a binocular, but the other eye is like looking over here
or
at
like
this computer,
reading a newspaper upside down, you
right.
know, and
getting information like
with,
1950.
Or with like
sitting
holes
on a,
cut
sitting
out.
On a bench. Right. Sitting on a park bench.
It was really offensive how he was gathering his information.
But this sort of idea of gathering information, well, we don't know what that means because we thought this, you know, we didn't think this, but people thought the spy balloon was gathering information, and it very well could have been scientific information. That is just what scientists do. This could be the same. And so, you know, now this we're sort of weaponizing this idea of intelligence gathering when they could be counting fishing populations for all we know. We don't know what this is. They just said this quote, and maybe it's just a translation from this news service, but gather intelligence in an offensive way. Like, did I just read that?
That sounds like
I mean, that's what espionage is. That's like all intelligence gathering. There's literally nobody doing it in a non-offensive, polite way. How can
right.
you?
Yeah.
You know, it's like
good point.
That's the whole idea behind it.
Yeah.
Like, congratulations, Norway. You figured out what espionage is.
But also, what if they are just sort of, you know, have asked other, you know, citizens in sort of the Dunkirk kind of way? That's the whole premise of that movie.
Right.
Is like
well,
using civilian ships to like accomplish something for their country. I'm not saying this is on the level with Dunkirk, but at the same time, what if they are sort of saying, hey, if you see anybody else out there trying to bomb our shit, you know, can you let the government know? Like, if you see something, say something, like
right.
you see on the subway, is that sabotage or espionage? We don't know.
Yeah, does it rise to the level of like helping your nation, right? Like Dunkirk. Yeah, you know, we need every fishing vessel, every able-bodied person right now with a fishing vessel, come help get your breath, you know, get your men off the beaches of Dunkirk. They're about to be slaughtered. We need to get them home now, you know?
Yeah. But that was using, you know, non-military equipment and,
right.
and vessels in order to accomplish something
yeah.
for the country. So, if, you know, you could make the argument that this is something that the government is saying, hey, any Russian vessels that are out there, if you see anything like this, please let us know. And they're just like, yeah, like literally like in the subway, these, you know, if you see something, say something, placards, here's how to let the government know if you see any of this again. You know, and then for us to call this sabotage, it's just, there's a lot of holes in that. And look, maybe one of these Baltic countries did help the U.S. sabotage this pipeline, and maybe they didn't. But another important question to circle back around is, does Facebook give one side the final say? I don't think that's right. And Facebook has said that they don't want to be the arbiters of truth. So why then give the U.S. government the pass here and censor something that's unfavorable towards the government? This is what Schellenberger is calling a piece of... Yeah, go ahead, David.
Well, I just wanted to say I have a friend, Ben, who did some articles on Facebook and was fact-checked. And he went back with citing his evidence, and his evidence was more thorough than theirs, but they still went with the fact-checker. So it doesn't even matter... That you're, I mean, and even in that article, it said award-winning journalist Seymour Hersh. Like, they gave him praise, but then they're like, but he's wrong.
Yeah.
Right. Pulitzer Prize-winning. Right. Right.
Well, we saw this with COVIDism. We know that the truth is not a data point.
Yeah.
When there is what Michael Schellenberger is calling the censorship industrial complex. So we can add that to the other industrial complexes that are not in the public interest. So we have military, biopharmaceutical, homeless industrial complex, and now we have censorship industrial complex. We see that through the Twitter files. You know, we will continue to see it. Here's how he describes it. And he does have an association where he's trying to fight it. So listen, I'll let him say it for himself.
I speak to you today about an extremely grave issue. Over the last several months, my colleagues and I have discovered the existence of a censorship industrial complex, which consists of U.S. and other government agencies, private sector think tanks, and academic institutions that are working together to spy on and censor ordinary citizens for constitutionally protected speech online. We can't do this work alone. We need to hear directly from you if you work for the U.S. government Department of Homeland Security's Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, the Atlantic Council, the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, Graphica, Stanford Internet Observatory, University of Washington, Center for American Progress, or the Center for Countering Digital Hate Online, or any other organization that claims to be fighting misinformation, disinformation, or fighting online hate. These organizations are threatening the very foundation of our democracy and our freedom. We've assembled a world-class legal team to protect whistleblowers, and we will do everything in our power to protect you and others that come forward with vital information. We can't do this work alone. Please, you may email me on my encrypted email, michaelschellenberger@proton.me. I look forward to hearing from you.
All right. Well, let us know what you think. Is this something that Facebook should be getting involved with, or is this something you should have as a Facebook user the right to see? And do you think that the censorship industrial complex is just as serious as the other industrial complexes? I do. But I'd like to hear from you.
Indeed, we would. We've got some big breaking news that we want to get to. We've had a chance to go through some of this already, and we want to bring it to you. We will after the break, which is the Fauci files. Now, we've been waiting for the Dr. Fauci Twitter files since December. And we will now get our first crack at the Fauci files and what that portends. So we're going to go through those here in a moment. In just a moment, we're going to take a little quick break here, get some water, and we want to tell you about protecting yourself on the internet, because right now, if you do a search for stuff on the internet, like just go like try to look up your mom's like personal information or something on the internet and see what you find, you will be stunned. You can't believe what you will find thanks to the internet. And that's why our friends at Aura are here to protect your identity. Because Aura will identify data brokers that are exposing your information and automatically submit opt-out requests on your behalf. They'll even opt you out of junk mail, telemarketing lists. You can use our link right now, right there on your screen. We have a URL right there on the screen, plus we have a QR code right on the screen. It's aura.com/redacted. So we are thankful for them for sponsoring our show. Now you can try it for 2 weeks. And to see how many data brokers are sharing your information, just sign up and you're going to be blown away at like what of your information is out there. We had our entire Facebook account hacked. We had our email hacked. We had a whole bunch of issues. And we had a recent round of attacks trying to get in our Twitter accounts. We got alerts about all of this thanks to Aura. And that's amazing what Aura is able to do. Let them do the hard work for you. Keep all of your safety online in one place. When you sign up at Aura, you'll give you a few 2 week free trial with our link, and they'll be able to find out if your stuff is being out there sold on the dark web and get it taken care of. You'll be shocked at how much of your private information Aura finds exposed over those 2 weeks that you're with them. For visit our sponsor today at Aura right now. Try your free trial at aura.com/redacted. That's Aura, aura.com/redacted. Try 14 days for free. Protect yourself from America's fastest growing crime, which is cybercrime right now. All right. Well, we've been waiting for it, guys. We've been waiting since December to get our hands on the Dr. Fauci files. And it all, of course, started back when Elon Musk had tweeted out this: "My pronouns are prosecute and Fauci," is what he said back on December 11th, 2022. That's when he went on and said that. And we said, whoa, are they about to drop? This was amidst all of the other big Fauci files, the Twitter files that were about to drop and were dropping at that time. We got to see about censorship. We knew about the censorship industrial complex that was unfolding. Like, what did that all look like? But we had to wait. We kept waiting. We were wondering if we were ever going to get it. Well, now, Paul D. Thacker, who is a journalist, former investigator, U.S. Senate, former SAFRA Ethics Center at Harvard, here is the journalist who has now got his hands on the Fauci files and is now releasing the first tranche of the Fauci files.
Do you think this is the first, or do you think there will be more?
First of more, you mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. Well, let's see what's here. Because this is breaking during our show, we're going through it with you. So there may be stuff that we haven't had the opportunity to dig further into. But let's go through it together because it's time.
Yes.
It's go time, folks.
All right, so let's start. Twitter files, Fauci pharma files. Last December, Elon Musk sent out this viral tweet about Dr. Fauci. Fauci then went on Fox News and said he had no clue what Elon was talking about. "I have no idea what he's talking about," he said. Number two, a lot of people are spouting out a lot of things about me and Twitter, Fauci told Fox News. I've never had a Twitter account. I don't intend having a Twitter account. I've had nothing to do with Twitter, so I don't know what they're talking about when they say that.
All right. And number three, he said Fauci made similar claims during multiple exchanges, including this 7-hour deposition where he denied using Twitter or even knowing how to access the tweet. We went over this deposition. I think it was in response to the suit by the two attorneys generals in
Indiana.
I don't think it was in Indiana. I think it was Iowa? Alabama and Missouri, I believe, are the two states that were accusing the Biden administration of censoring information about COVID. I believe this is the deposition, but I've seen him say this several times.
So number four, but an internal Twitter report in March 2021, the company revealed Dr. Anthony Fauci did have an account takeover for
WHO COVID response. It says this runs contrary to Fauci's public statements and sworn deposition given on November 23rd, 2022. So this is the report here, if we click it open, saying that he did an account takeover. So what that means is, you know, you take over someone's account and you tweet from them and,
for a
you answer questions for a period of time. So when did that happen? He did that. Does it say when?
It says February 4th, I believe.
Where do you see that?
Right up there. It says White House task force
on
with
February
4th. COVID health experts on.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So is that of 2021? We're supposed to assume, I suppose. Okay.
Yeah. Now, according to this tweet, Fauci took over the White House COVID response account again on April 2021.
Yeah, it says Fauci will take over this Twitter account. Number six, Fauci was beloved by Twitter 1.0. I guess we're talking about Twitter 1.0 as pre-Elon Musk Twitter. Elon Musk's tweet last December, he tweeted that former employees had an internal Slack channel unironically called Fauci Fan Club. Okay.
Number seven, Attorney General Angela Scherer, who left when Musk sought to buy Twitter, praised Fauci as praised him as the leading trusted voice about COVID-19 response in the United States. So this is inside of Twitter.
So here's her email. I guess, yes, calling him that. Angela Scherer, she's an internal Twitter lawyer, was no small fry at Twitter. According to a deposition by FBI agent Elvis Chan, Scherer was one of the attorneys he interfaced with on different disinformation at Twitter. Here's the deposition of Elvis Chan saying, does anyone else at Twitter who would participate in meetings that related to malign foreign influence or disinformation? This is Elvis Chan responding, yes, on the attorney side, they regularly had several security councils attend. And the senior official at the time of the 2020 elections was Angela Scherer, but she's no longer with the company.
Twitter didn't just rely on the voices of prominent physicians like Fauci. Oddly enough, they also worked with big pharma companies and pharmacy chains to shape vaccine marketing campaigns. In December 2020, Twitter announced that they would begin removing and labeling tweets that contain vaccine misinformation, especially concerning COVID-19 vaccines.
So that was the headline of their announcement on December of 2020. During that same time, Twitter began working with Johnson & Johnson on COVID-19 vaccine marketing strategy and with CVS Pharmacy to promote approved narratives. So what's highlighted here?
Pitched CVS on tactics to expand distribution of upcoming One Step Closer vaccine campaigns, currently awaiting feedback, awaiting more details from Johnson & Johnson's messaging strategy following the approval of their vaccine. So Twitter was actively working with these big pharma companies on marketing strategy.
To promote the vaccine.
And to promote these approved narratives about it.
All right. By the summer of 2021, Johnson & Johnson began a full court press to market a ton of their products on Twitter, including a controversial antidepressant. And here's the lead. Johnson & Johnson takes to Twitter to expand its network of storytelling patients. Number 13. Is this towards the end?
Much to thanks. Much thanks to Texas Lindsay, who have collected and organized Twitter files. We read and read until our eyes bleed. More to come.
Okay. Right. So, and then he says this Harvard epidemiologist and statistician at Harvard is suing the federal government for colluding with social media companies on censorship, saying Twitter should be a place for people to exchange ideas without information. So if you go down, it says tomorrow at 9, there will be more. You can set yourself a reminder. And I clicked that. So what do we know then? Let's try and let's go over this. We know then that Fauci did have interaction with Twitter. Is that a bombshell? And I don't know. Like, he said he never used Twitter in a deposition, and he did these events.
Yeah.
But in a takeover like that, he's probably got staff sitting next to him that are running it. They're probably typing everything in. He's not sitting there typing and all that. He might have been present, but I don't think, you know, like these celebrities that do these Q&As, they just sit there and somebody feeds them the questions they answer, and somebody's like fast typing like a stenographer for them.
I don't think that's a big gotcha.
I don't see that as anything. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, he said many times in the deposition, I don't engage with Twitter. Like, that doesn't mean he knows how to at reply or tag somebody or thread a tweet or anything like that. So,
I was going to say the damning part for me in my mind was the part where you know, Twitter is actually reading these emails and stuff, and they're saying, we want to create a narrative. If anybody tells me they want to create a narrative, whether it's a marketing company or whatever, that's trying to change the way people think, right?
Right.
You are trying to manipulate people. That just is code for that. So the fact that, you know, Twitter was in on that, they would have known that that's what they were doing by letting these marketing campaigns happen on their platform.
Right. Well, you should be free to buy whatever advertising you want to do your own marketing on Twitter within reason. But why is Twitter giving them marketing services? Why is Twitter acting as an extension of Johnson & Johnson's marketing arm? This, incidentally, is one of the first times we've heard much about Johnson & Johnson. Most of the information we've seen thus far has been about Pfizer and a little bit of Moderna. So, why were so many high-level lawyers involved in discussing, this part about FBI agent Elvis Chan, well, that usually relates, he was related to the Hunter Biden laptop. So I'm not sure what that has to do with COVID, other than the fact that this high-level attorney who was working with the FBI to maybe censor Hunter Biden type stuff also just was a big fan of Fauci.
Right.
Those are the connections I think we're supposed to make.
Yeah, and this is not maybe as big of a bombshell, drop that I thought we were going to see in the first batch of this. Maybe they're sort of going in with bated breath.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like the Slack channel shows collusion. It shows collusion between the people that were big, huge Fauci fans, and everything he said is gold. Like, everything he says is the narrative. So we've got this channel, so we're going to look at the things that people are saying against Fauci, and that's going to come down. So it shows collusion between Twitter, and then you got the FBI agent in there. You've got the pharmaceutical industry in there, so it's a bunch of collusion.
Yeah.
So I think that's basically what they're pointing out.
Again, the FBI agent is not in relationship to COVID, as far as we've seen so far, because Elvis Chan was really instrumental in censoring the Hunter Biden story. But I don't think he has much to do with COVID. Maybe we haven't seen it yet. Maybe we will. What were you going to say, Philip?
I was going to say that I find it interesting the timing of it being Johnson & Johnson, because you're saying we hadn't heard much about Johnson & Johnson. But that was mid-April 21 is when they said that, right?
Yeah.
That was from?
Yeah.
That's isn't that right around when Johnson & Johnson was pulled from the shelves because they knew there were issues with it, and then they re-released it? But it's like that was so like at the time they knew something was wrong with it. They're getting ready to pull it off the shelves and they're pushing Twitter to promote it.
Yeah.
I just find that the timing of that to be interesting.
Yeah, it was summer when they had those problems. And of course, I remember that morning when all the breaking news was like, oh, my God, what's wrong with Johnson & Johnson? And then they're like, no, we got to figure everything should be fine. And then now it's gone. Totally pulled off. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so that, you know, Twitter announced they would begin removing and labeling tweets that contain vaccine misinformation based on what? This is where, like, I want to get to, you know, deeper into this, too. Like, based on what? What is the misinformation? And, of course, if Fauci is their lifeline, if he's the guy, the yeah. people on Fauci's staff were sort of given golden sun status right. by the internal attorneys at the Twitter saying, yeah, he's the golden boy. Let's listen to everything that Fauci has to say. And then anything that goes against what they're telling us, we're going to yank their tweets down and label them misinformation.
Yeah.
So,
well, it was him and the pharmaceutical industry that were guiding the WHO, the CDC, and the government through Fauci. I mean, all of that came through Fauci.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, let us think, let us know if we missed anything that was a bigger bombshell than what we have seen here, but we will continue to follow this. Yeah, and make sure you keep up with the newsletter.
I mean,
well,
a lot of the big well. Headlines about it are that Fauci did, in fact, use a Twitter account despite public statements and sworn depositions saying that he didn't. Okay, so that seems to be, to me, there's other pieces of this that are bigger, but that seems to be what the headlines are taking away from this first tranche of documents dumped from Twitter. So, yeah, let us know your thoughts on this. We'll do that. All right.
Well, because we added that breaking news, we'll move the story we were going to do tonight about new research about trans health over to Monday. So be sure to join us because that does it for this week's set of live shows. It's great to be back with you. Thank you for being patient yesterday when I was out. Be sure to join our community over at redacted.inc and you'll find our newsletter there. It's free and it is, again, meant as sort of a companion to this show, but you can also join our community. You get the newsletter for free and you can join the community for about a price of the price of a cup of coffee. And that's where we can communicate with you because we also have been a victim of the censorship industrial complex. You may already know that. Feels terrible when it happens. We hope it never happens again, but we always thread the line between what we think we should be sharing with each other and what we are allowed to say on these platforms. The newsletter, though, is our platform. We say what we want, and it's very freeing.
So subscribe to the show, subscribe to the channel. Thank you guys so much for being a part of us, a part of our great community here. We really appreciate it on YouTube and Rumble. Thank you guys so much. We hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your week. And we will be back here first thing on Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Much love to you and your family. This family is still slightly recovering and still we're operating at about 70% capacity.
Yeah.
I feel like 70% with all the flu and craziness in this house. So it's time to...
We all five ate around the dinner table tonight.
That was a big moment.
Now everyone's feeling up to showing up for dinner. So that's something.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So thank you, everyone. We will see you back here on Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. We'll have content this weekend as well. And we'll hope you have a great weekend, everyone. Bye now.